Okay, I'm just delighted to be here to get to speak about Ecclesiastes. It's something that's really fun and really special to me. This last week, we were traversing the globe in different places. On Thursday night, we were having a dinner reception on at the Gorono Ranch in Telluride, Colorado. And there were about 100 or so people there. And I was having a chance to visit with Rhonda and Randy Lowry. Rhonda is on staff at Lipscomb University in the Bible department, and Randy is the president of Lipscomb University. I know him also as a lawyer. This was actually a law event where we were, and he was the featured speaker there. We brought him into, it was our law firm's retreat, annual retreat. And so we're having this reception, getting ready for this dinner. We've got our lawyers there. We've got a few other guests there. And one fella stands out. He's a doctor who is fond of wearing a dashiki. I don't know if you know what those are, but think hippie, Jerry Garcia, are you coming to San Francisco, wear flowers in your hair type shirt. And so David came up, and I had a chance. David was over there, and they said to me, "So who's the fella in the dashiki?" I said, "Oh, him. Really incredible guy." I said, he's one of my projects. If he's watching this on the internet, you're one of my projects. He's an avowed atheist, an outspoken atheist. He comes to our class once a year in December, and I point him out. Jewish heritage, real tough life. His dad was in Auschwitz concentration camp. Just a tough, tough life. But he's a brilliant man. And he's a wonderful friend. He's a doctor who's board certified in multiple areas. He teaches at Brown University. And he's just a good friend. So David was there. David also has a charity that he has put together that works out of Africa and other places called GHETS, G-H-E-T-S, Global Health Education and Training and Services. And what it is it's a charity that's designed to try and get education for health care in the third world countries. So we don't just fly over in an airplane and drop medicine out from the airplane, which people have no idea how to use. Instead, you train healthcare workers to administer the medicines right, things like this. Wonderful, wonderful mix. So about that time, as I'm explaining this to Rhonda and Randy, both of whom are very devout Christians, David walks over, and it gave me a chance to explain it a little further. And Randy looks at David. Randy says, "So why do you do these things?" We'd already covered the fact that David Eagleman's an atheist. Why do you do these things? David's answer was, "Well, the poor and the underprivileged rarely have someone to stand up for them, so I am." Now think about this for a moment. And Randy pressed him a little bit, but didn't press him too far. But it's an interesting question. If there is no God, there is no hereafter, there is no higher calling, if everything that exists, exists here, or as the writer of Ecclesiastes says, under the sun, and there's nothing beyond, why would you do this? Well, there was a fellow named Thomas Malthus, who was an Anglican clergyman back in the 1800s. If you were a high school debater, you know Thomas Malthus, because we used him in high school debate. Thomas Malthus was dealing with the overpopulation issue and the fact that there were a lot of people who were starving back in the 1800s, and there was an effort to try to feed them. And Thomas Malthus wrote an essay on the principle of population. And what he said in there is, for every life that you save from starvation today, 10 people are going to die in the future. You save someone starving today in a third world country, the Malthusian hypothesis goes, you save someone today, all they're going to do is you save them so that they can rebreed. And ultimately, they will outbreed whatever you're giving them to eat. And so for every life you save today, you're killing 10 people in the future. Ergo, let them starve. Now, Dr. David, my friend, the atheist, the man who's working so hard to improve care for these people, why? What's the reason? Well, into this conversation of what is the point of doing anything for someone who cannot do something in return to you? in response to that, drops this little book in the Old Testament. Drops down, and we read it. Ecclesiastes. Because Ecclesiastes is going to address this for us. Now, one of the articles I read getting ready for this lesson was an article that appeared in Grace Theological Journal a couple of decades ago, and it was entitled Koheleth, Enigmatic Pessimist or Godly Sage. Now, I suspect if you were just reading through journals and you saw that title, you might not stop to read it until this class is over. After this class is over, you would read that in a heartbeat, because that is the question that we have in this class. Koheleth, enigmatic pessimist or godly sage? Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanity. All is vanity. This is the second verse in Ecclesiastes. This is the way it starts. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Preacher? Capital P preacher? What goes on with capital P preacher? Doesn't start a sentence. You don't normally capitalize preacher, do you? You homeschooled your kids. Did you teach them to capitalize preacher? I mean, do we capitalize preacher normally in writing? No. You're an English teacher. Unless it begins a sentence, no. You know, that word preacher in Hebrew is koheleth. Koheleth. And that word, koheleth, means an assembly. And it's written in such a way that it's talking about the leader of the assembly. Who is the leader of our assembly? Our preacher. David Fleming, Pastor David. See, koheleth is the author. If we could look here real quick. This begins. Ecclesiastes starts with the words of the preacher. Capitalized preacher. Hebrew, the footnote, Hebrew, koheleth. Now, koheleth, preacher, is maybe a proper name. Scholars don't really know. That may have been the guy's name. So the way the translators cover all of those grounds without giving you much helpful information is they entitle it preacher, and then they capitalize it. So it may be his proper name. So like David, $50? Now maybe it's 100 now. I don't know, Mike could tell us maybe, but for $100 we could go change his name legally at the courthouse to preacher. We'd do it for free for him, free legal services, just so he could be the preacher. But then he would capitalize preacher. So preacher is koheleth. That helps us. Koheleth, preacher, enigmatic pessimist, or godly sage. We don't know. By the way, Koheleth, when they translated it, the Jews translated the Bible into Greek, they changed it into a word that comes from assembly in Greek, ekklesia. So in the Latin, it's Liber Ecclesiastes, our book of Ecclesiastes, and we just call it Ecclesiastes. So our book title comes from the Greek version of that Hebrew word koheleth. But that's what we've got, koheleth. Now you need to know one other Hebrew word here. This is very important to our class. And for those of you who are visiting, we've spent time in this class learning the Hebrew alphabet. So a few folks, Diana Smart, I will not make you stand up here and sing your song, even though it's tremendous. Hevel. That's your H, your B or V, depending on whether it has a dot in it. No dot in it makes it a V sound here. L, Hevel. Hevel, or Hebel if it's the dots in it. Hevel means a vapor, a whiff, a puff. And as a result of those meanings, it carries with it this idea of emptiness. Just vanity. It's translated meaninglessness, some translated as. That is our word. Now, hevel is so hard for us to really get with one English word that a number of scholars recommend we just learn the Hebrew word hevel. Because it means a puff of smoke. It means something that just goes away. It means something that has no real significance. It means something you don't really notice. It just means hevel. Hevel. So we need to know those words. Koheleth, the preacher, and hevel. And with those, we're going to ask the question that Kanade asked in his article. Koheleth, the preacher, Ecclesiastes. Is this a pessimist? Or is this someone who has some godly wisdom? What is it? Well, let's look at it. The story begins, the book begins, with hevel, or vanity, a whisper, a puff in the natural world. And so we'll put it up here, and you're going to see one phrase in particular that occurs over and over and over. By the way, hevel, the word hevel, occurs 38 times in these short 12 chapters. Over half the time it's used in the Old Testament happens in just this book. So we looked at it briefly, but let's go into a little more detail. Hevel of hevel, says Koheleth. Hevel of hevels. All is hevel. Everything is a wisp of smoke. There's no meaning in anything. Everything is empty and devoid of meaning. And he starts out in the physical world. What does it gain a man? What does man gain by all of the work at which he works under the sun? Now, I want you to notice this under the sun, because it's one of the key words, phrases to understanding this entire book and answering Kanade's question. Is this a pessimist or is this a godly sage? Because so much of what the Ecclesiastes writer says, so much of the preacher of Koheleth's words are phrased under what is under the sun. Here's my question. If this is earth, and this is the sun, okay, under the sun, everything that we see, live, breathe, and do is the focus of this book. Now, where is God in this picture? Is God trapped under the sun? Is he on earth? Is God in the rocks? No. God is beyond the sun. He's beyond the heavens. He made the sun. He made the earth. He's not trapped here. We need to keep that in our mind as we walk through this book together. Because what Koheleth is asking is, what does man gain by all the toil that he does under the sun? A generation goes, a generation comes. The earth just sticks around. You and me, raise your hand in here if you figure you're probably going to die. Raise your hand here. If you figure after you die, there'll be another generation alive, barring the Lord coming back. Under the sun, all things being equal, no God up there doing anything special and coming and bringing the second coming. Under the sun, the earth remains. People, they come and go. The sun rises, the sun goes down. And you know what it does? It rises again. Not even the sun finishes its work. Even the sun, it rises, it sets, then it just got to do the same thing over and over again. Doing it the first time or the second time or the billionth time wasn't good enough. It just happens again. How about the wind? Well, it blows to the south, goes around to the north. Blows to the south, goes around to the north, round and round. Wind never finishes what it's doing either. It's not done. It has to repeat it. It stays on its circuits. What about streams? Well, they run to the sea. Has the sea filled up yet? Nope. That's not working either. All the work of the sun never finishes the sun's work. All the work of the wind never finishes the wind's work. All the work of man never finishes the work of man. Do you think any of us, our generation, are we going to finish work so that the next generation doesn't have to? Of course not. Of course not. Same thing with the streams. They just have to keep flowing. Does this not wear you out? This is full of weariness. A man can't utter it. You can't even say it. Your eyes not satisfied with seeing, nor your ear filled with hearing. Has anyone ever reached a point where they're able to say, okay, I've now heard everything. I can close my ears. I mean, my hearing is done. I'm through. Has anybody ever reached a point where they're able to say, my eyes have now seen everything. I can close them. It's safe for me to go blind. I have nothing else to see. No. I mean, nothing's finished. And everything that you've done, it's been done before. I mean, who's going to eat today? Have you ever eaten before? Who's going to sleep? Not during class. Who's going to sleep? Have you ever slept before? Everything you're doing, it never got done so that you don't have to do it anymore. That's his view of things under the sun. There's nothing new under the sun. See, there's nothing where you can say, hey, this is new. Or you might be sitting there saying, well, yeah, that new operating system for the Apple computer had not been out before. That's not what he's talking about. Don't get nitpicky. He's talking about the fact that everything you do, in essence, it's all been done before. It's got to be done again. It's this vicious cycle, and it's meaningless because you never get it done. And ultimately, people don't remember former things, and they're not going to remember some of this. Oh, do y'all remember that fella who lived in Houston in 1876 and what he made for lunch that day? No, but there was a fellow living in Houston in 1876 who made something for lunch. If we go back to the PowerPoint, what these first 11 verses say to us is in the natural world around us, it's all vapor, it's all whiff, it's all a puff, it's all empty, it's meaningless, it's got no meaning. He doesn't stop there. He says, the ideas, wisdom, and knowledge, that's pointless as well. There's absolutely nothing of meaning even in wisdom and knowledge. Let's pick back up here. He says, I, Koheleth, I've been king over Jerusalem. I applied my heart to seek and to search out by wisdom all that is done under heaven, under the sun. It's an unhappy business that God has given to the children of man to be busy with. God has given us some miserable stuff. I've seen everything done under the sun. And behold, everything under the sun is vanity, hevel, dust, wisp of air, puff, meaningless. Everything done under the sun is meaningless. It's not just, if we go back to the PowerPoint, it's not just wisdom. He wanted to learn everything, not only wisdom, but even his personal life shows everything is useless. Look at chapter 2. So he says, if wisdom isn't going to be the answer, I said in my heart, well, I'll test you with pleasure. Have fun. But this also was hevel. I said of laughter, well, it's mad. Of pleasure, what use is it really? I searched with my heart how to cheer my body with wine, my heart still guiding me with wisdom, how to lay hold of folly till I might see what was good for the children of men to do under the heaven. I've tried every pleasure there was to try. I tried to get inebriated, drunk. I tried drugs. I tried every possible pleasure. And you know what? It's It's a wisp of smoke. It's really meaningless. I still got the same life I had before. Oh, I've tried making great works. I built houses. I planted vineyards. I made gardens. I made parks. I planted orchards. I made swimming pools, forests of trees. I bought slaves. I had slaves not that I bought that were born to me. I had so many they were breeding. I had great possessions of herds and flocks. I had more than anybody had ever had before. I got silver and gold. I got treasures of kings and provinces. I had singers. I had my own rock band. Men and women. Depends on the mood. I had concubines, the delight of the children of men. I became great. I had fame. I surpassed those before me. My wisdom. I had everything my eye desired. I kept my heart from no pleasure. And then I considered all that my hands had done and the work I'd expended in doing, and behold, it was all hevel, empty, meaningless. It was a striving after wind. There was nothing to be gained, say it, under the sun, under the sun. And that's the way it is. Now you may say, well, I don't have all those things. I think if I had all those things, there'd be a lot to gain. There wouldn't. What some people manage to do is they get on they're the rats on the wheel. And they just run on that wheel really hard. And they really think they're getting somewhere. But they're not. If you were going to die this afternoon, honestly, if you were going to die this afternoon, would you spend your last hour going out trying to make an extra $10? If you were going to die this afternoon and there's nothing under nothing beyond the sun, you don't have a promise of life after death, you have nothing at all, you're just looking under the sun, and you're going to die this afternoon, do you really think you would spend your last hour trying to build something? Oh, I think I'll put in a new hedge in my last hour. It doesn't have a lot of purpose, not only in the personal life, but it's hevel also in the chores that you do, in the work. Oh, yes, but I have an important job. I'm a lawyer. No. Doesn't matter. Go back to this. Look at verse 18. I hated my job in which I work under the sun. Starting to see a pattern here? Seeing that I must leave it to whoever's coming after me. And I don't know whether he's going to be wise or a fool. But he's going to be master for all that I toiled for. He'll use my wisdom under the sun. This is also hevel. So I turned about. I gave my heart up to despair over all the work that I'm doing under the sun. Because sometimes a person who's toiled with wisdom and knowledge and skill must leave everything to be enjoyed by someone who didn't even work for it. Well, that's also vanity. What has a man from all the work and striving with which he toils beneath the sun? All of his days are full of sorrow, his works of vexation. Even in the night, his heart doesn't rest. This also is vanity, hevel. He says there's really nothing better that a person to do than eat, drink, and find enjoyment in his work. That's from God. Apart from him, who can eat or have enjoyment? Now, this is the first thing that we've seen that's not under the sun. There is some level of enjoyment in your toil. There is eating and drinking that's from God. But apart from God, who can eat or have enjoyment? Apart from God, you take God out of the equation, and it's meaningless. It's absolutely meaningless. We go back to the PowerPoint. So It's meaningless in the work you do. It's meaningless in your personal life. And then we hit chapter 3. And the writer gives us a song. Who knows the song from Ecclesiastes? Okay, trivia. Birds, number one hit, 1965. But they didn't write it. Not Bob Dylan. Pete Seeger wrote it in 1959. Ding, 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 we have a winner. Okay, you know, because we always want this class to be incredibly useful. Pete Seeger, bless his little atheist heart. Pete Seeger took the words word for word out of the 1611 King James Version. He did change some of the orders of the verses to make it fit the rhythm of his song, but it's word for word. So for at least a 10-year period, Seeger sat down and he did some math. He figured out, I'm getting royalties when I didn't write the whole thing. So he says, okay, well, 100% of the royalties, all right, let's say half of it is the music and half is the lyrics, okay? Pete Seeger gets the half that's the music because he wrote the music. But how can he be collecting royalties from the lyrics when he stole them from the Bible? So what he says is, he says, I'm going to donate that to a nonprofit in Israel. And then he started thinking about it some more, and he thought, but wait a minute, the Bible doesn't have that turn, turn, turn echo. That's got to be 5% of the song. So I'm going to donate 45% of the royalties to a nonprofit in Israel to represent those lyrics coming from the Bible. And he did. Now, as we're working through this, we get that. And we can see that song. And the song's got meaning. And the passage itself is just showing, actually, the point of the passage is the same thing. It's still all Hevel. Everything's got its time and place, but it just keeps coming around. There's a time for this and a time for that, but it just keeps coming around. It's the same thing. There's nothing new under the sun. So within the framework of that, there's actually another song that came out in the same era that better reflects the message of Ecclesiastes, at least as far as being under the sun. Any suggestions? Can't get no satisfaction. You try and you try and you try and you try. I can't get no satisfaction. It's all Hevel. It's all meaningless. I don't know that Mick necessarily had been reading his Bible before he wrote that. But the point, it's a wonderful illustration of what life is like under the sun. So we get that, and it's no different after the song in Ecclesiastes. If we keep going through the text, we'll see in Ecclesiastes some hints of life outside of the sun. I mean, it does say that what gain has the worker from his toil? I've seen the business that God's given to the children of men to keep them busy. He's made everything beautiful in its time. There is a season for everything. and he's put eternity into man's heart, yet so that he cannot find out what God has done from the beginning to the end. Look at this for a moment. This is very, very important. This is very important. God put eternity into man's heart, but he did it in a way that man can't figure it out. God put eternity into our heart. There's not a human alive that doesn't think about the idea of eternity, that doesn't think of an idea of life beyond time, that doesn't think. There's not one of us that's not looking to do something that does make a difference. There's not one of us that's not looking to live their life where there is meaning, where it's not all a vapor. There's not one of us that's not looking and longing for something more than this empty existence under the sun. And the difficulty is, let's stay on here for a moment. The difficulty is, we can't satisfy that. Man on his own cannot satisfy that longing. We can't figure it out. We can't get an answer to the longing on our own. We can't do, we live under the sun. We can't get above the sun. At least at the time this fellow's writing. But he did perceive something. He said, I perceived that there's nothing better than to be joyful and to do good as long as they live, and everyone should eat and drink and take pleasure in his toil as God's gift to man. That there's something God's given us that gives joy even in the midst of empty vapors. Well, he keeps going, and he talks about all of this. He talks about what he sees under the sun. In the place of justice, there's wickedness. He talks about how everybody, you know, we die just like animals. He says, we die, we don't even have an advantage over the beasts. It's all vanity. We're all going to die. He talks about the oppressions that are done under the sun. And he talks about over and over and over, what's been done under the sun is a vanity and a striving after wind. Again, I saw vanity under the sun. You get this over and over and over. Chapter 6, there's an evil that I have seen under the sun. It lies heavy on mankind. He talks about a man to whom God gives wealth, possessions, and honor so that he doesn't lack anything. But he doesn't even enjoy them. Because he dies and someone else enjoys him, it's a vanity. If a man fathers 100 children and lives many years, so the days of his life are many, but his soul's not satisfied, he doesn't have a burial, he's like a stillborn child. No, a stillborn child's better off than he is because it's all vanity and it's all darkness. The expressions used through this book are tremendous. He talks about the rich guy who can't sleep at night. Because he's either got indigestion from overeating, or he's got economic indigestion because he's worried about losing all of his money. And they keep him up late at night. He says, you go through the biggest charts of what most people think are blessings, and they're useless. Now, in the midst of this, there are some passages of Scripture that are famous that we really have to look at, because you can't say we studied Ecclesiastes without looking at them. So let's pause for a moment on all being hevel and vanity. Not really pause. We'll explain them in context. But let's make sure we cover a couple of important scriptures. This one gets used in weddings. Isn't it interesting? In weddings, people are using a passage from the book that talks about how meaningless this whole thing is. I'll leave that alone. Two are better than one because they have a good reward for their toil. If one falls, the other will lift up his fellow. But woe to him who's alone when he falls and doesn't have another to lift him up. If two lie together, they keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? Though a man might prevail against one who's alone, two will withstand him. A threefold cord is not quickly broken. All wonderful. Good living advice. But ultimately, at the end of the chapter, this also is vanity and a striving after wind. Oh, it's nice to have someone to help you. but it's still vanity and it's still striving after wind. He talks in here about how death comes to everybody. He talks about how sometimes when you work hard, things work out. But maybe you know this. Sometimes when you work hard, you still miss it. Did you know bad things happen to good people? You can work yourself to death making the best perfume there is known to man or woman. And accidentally, one dead fly gets in it. And it's just going to take that perfume and make it give off a stench. You can be working hard to chop down a tree to clear a forest. And do the best job chopping down that tree. And you might cut yourself with the axe. You didn't do it on purpose. Accidents happen. And it just is this way. And that's the way of life. So what do you do? Well, another passage of fame. Chapter 11, cast your bread upon the waters, for you'll find it after many days. Now, I know what you're thinking. Yeah, but who wants to eat it then? It's not quite what he means. There is an emptiness and there is a vanity that under the sun exists. And it's that plain and simple. And so this book ends in chapter 12, where it began. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher, Koheleth. All is Hevel. So what's the end result? What's the bottom line? Where do we end, preacher? Well, the end of the matter, now that we've talked about it and we've heard everything, the end of the matter is this. Fear God, keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every deed into judgment with every secret thing, whether good or evil. Here's the answer. Go back to our under the sun drawing. There is a God beyond the sun. And under the sun, it does not make sense. And we can't decide what has value and what doesn't because we live under the sun. And if that's our entire perspective, then under the sun, it is all Hevel. It is all empty. It is all void. It is God who gives it meaning because God exists beyond the sun. Now, I say all of this. Let's go back to the PowerPoint, and I want to look at the points for home for a moment. The first one, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. Hevel. Hevel. Life under the sun does not make sense. There's a New Testament writer who was very familiar with Ecclesiastes. His name? Brother Paul. And in Romans, the 8th chapter, he references the book of Ecclesiastes. Paul uses vanity in the Greek form as the Old Testament was translated into Greek before the time of Paul. It's the word that was used by the Jewish scholars who translated the Septuagint, we call it, the Greek version of the Old Testament. Here's the passage. Paul says, I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worth comparing with the glory that is to be revealed to us. The sufferings of this present time. Here's the next verse. He says, for the creation waits with eager longing for the revealing of the sons of God. For the creation was subjected to Hevel. Futility. The creation, life under the sun, the fallen world is futile. It's meaningless. It's a vapor. It's a wisp of air. It's vanity of vanities. But that's not the end. Pastor David talked about John 1 this morning, and he talked about something that happened after the book of Ecclesiastes was written. He talked about this God becoming man on earth. And something from beyond the sun came and made its presence here so that, as David referenced this morning, we might know God. All of a sudden now, through Jesus, we have a glimpse of something beyond the Son. And it's not only a glimpse of something, it's something that gives us the promise of eternity. If you had 1 hour left to live, I suspect what you might do is try and share Jesus with someone that you love dearly who doesn't know him, because it's your last hour to do it. Because you can do something that's life beyond this Son. Now all of a sudden the work that we do is not meaningless, because it's not just work that's passed on to another generation that may or may not appreciate it. Now what we do is work that's done for the Father. The good deeds that He prepared for us. And so there's a meaning beyond the Son. So life under the Son does not make sense, but life under the Son does. Koheleth, a pessimist or a godly sage? He's a godly sage. He's a wise man. This is wisdom literature. The teacher's right. What my friend didn't understand at the retreat is that he can do all of those wonderful deeds in the world, but the only reason they have any meaning at all is because there is a God. The only reason it's of value to save a life is because God made that life, and that life's made in God's image, and so that life has value. If there is no God, that life is no different than an animal. Ecclesiastes 12:3, fear God and keep His commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. This is it. What the writer of Ecclesiastes understood, the wisdom of this preacher, of Koheleth, is if we look around us and all we do is see life under the sun, then it is all meaningless and it is all a vapor. So the solution is to put your faith in God, knowing that God can see beyond the sun and that God will do what is worthwhile and God will put it all together. We are to walk by faith, not by sight. You walk by sight, you don't see where you there's not one of us wise enough to put it together walking by sight. There's just not. And then the last point for home. When I was in eighth grade, we were required to memorize this in Sunday school. Ecclesiastes 9:10. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might. We were required to memorize it. We were required to say it morning and evening. I say required. I mean, it's not like they had Sunday school police there. But we were told, and I was a rule follower, so tell me to do it, okay, I can do it. We were told, say it every morning and say it every evening for a week. And then find something that you did to the best of your ability and come back and tell the Sunday school class about it. So every morning and every evening, I would diligently for that week stand up and say, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might. And I went looking for something that my hand found to do that I was going to do my very, very, very best with. Now this is wonderful counsel. And it's a great point for home, because the point for home is you live to God's glory so that the world can see your vision beyond the sun. See, we understand we do it to our might, not because it's useless, not because it's meaningless. Someone might say, well, why are you working so hard at that? Does it really matter? And our response is, God's charged me to do this. If I try to figure out how something matters by my vision, I'll never get it figured out. It's only by my faith in God, and as I see God beyond this earth, that life has any meaning to me. And my God has told me to do this to the best of my ability. So I'm going to do this to the best of my ability, to the glory of God. Because if I don't, there is no meaning. But don't tell me, why are you doing that? Why are you working so hard at that? There's no point in it. There is a point God told me to. And if I don't honor the God who has given me this lot in my life by what I do, then I have wasted my life. Because outside of God's work, it is all meaningless. Next week, we do the Song of Solomon. God willing, I'll try and be very delicate as I speak. But those with children need to bring a coloring book, perhaps, for parts of it. It's a book that rabbis would wash their hands after they read because they felt like it just might be a little dirty. Would you pray with me? Lord, thank you so much that we don't live simply within this world and the natural. Thank you that your Spirit beckons to teach us the answer to that eternal question and cry in our heart. Thank you for reaching down to us and not only touching us individually, but setting yourself down on earth so that we might see life beyond our sun. We might have better understanding of who you are and how you love us and what you call us to do every day. And we pray that we'll live day by day doing our best to your glory, that we won't get caught on the little rat wheel, Lord, just running, trying to get our bank accounts bigger or our food tastier or whatever makes us feel good. Lord, instead, may we live beyond this world in your glory, seeking to do those things from you that within your plan have everlasting value. That is all we want, Lord. In Jesus' name we pray, amen.